human toll of war. And, you know, as a kid, you learn about World War II. You learn about all of these battles. You learn about, you know, how we got into them. And usually we glorify them. Usually, we, you know, we were the winners and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, I think back, especially to World War II, because my grandfather served in the Army at the time. And like I said, he never talked about it. So I never really had, you know, other than it was gruesome and, you know, a lot of people died, you know, the facts and figures that you get in history classes. But I never, you know, really got just how bad. I mean, you always hear man's inhumanity to man and, you know, there the images that people tell. But when I found this Aftershock book, the photographs in this thing are just absolutely heartbreaking. And to be honest, there's part of me that goes, I don't know that it should have ever been compiled, which is why I've asked the author, Mark Jacob, to come talk with us. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick.
I got to tell you, I'm looking at this book and it is just heartbreaking to me.
It was just amazing to go through the pictures and decide what to keep and what to not keep. And it was kind of overwhelming to look at the images. Because, I mean, yes, we all know what World War II was like. We've read all about it, but, you know, that was 75 years ago. And right now, we're kind of in this period where that just becomes kind of some fiction or some make-believe that's in movies, just to so many people, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you've got these Holocaust deniers and these people that, oh, it wasn't that bad. You go, no. And looking at this picture, you go, no, this was bad.
Yeah, this was bad, yes. And, you know, the thing about it was World War II was total war. And one of the things, you know, you, obviously you're looking at the book, you see how many civilians are caught up in it. This was not a war between armies. This was a war that affected everyone on Earth. And we feel like there were two things that we wanted to do in the book. We wanted to give a tribute to these soldier photographers who risked their lives to take all of these really amazing pictures. And we also wanted to remind people what total war looks like, because, you know, just with the idea that people would realize, you know, how much we don't want to be there ever again.
Right.
You know, Rick, we're in the longest war in United States history right now.
Yeah, and but nobody knows it. I mean, most people have forgotten it's actually happening.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't affect hardly anyone's, you know, everyday life. And that's a problem, because when that's the case, then very few people are having all the sacrifices, and the rest of you know, the American citizenry, the voters, seem to be much more likely to, you know, to elect politicians who will get us into other wars. And World War II is an obvious case where there was an evil to be confronted. So, you know, it's not like there's, in my mind, that you can't ever fight wars, but you better be careful of the ones you get into, and you can't control them once they start.
No, you're right. And I'll be honest, when I got the book, the first thing I did is I'm shielding my kids from it. And, you know, and it's one of those dilemmas that as a parent you have. Do you show them the harsh realities of man's inhumanity to man and our history, or do you try to, you know, protect them and, you know, and push them in another direction? But, you know, to me, you know, you brought up an interesting point. This could be viewed as an anti-war book, because this is what war really looks like.
Right, right. And just to be really clear, we tried to have enough variety where it wasn't just one unending horror show.
Right. I mean there were the kids on the Ferris wheel. You're right.
Right. There's relief. There's a really interesting picture of a disabled man riding a bike trying to teach other people who have lost limbs how to ride bikes. You know, and there's a variety of pictures, but the toughest pictures in the book are extremely tough and probably worse than any picture that people saw at the time. I mean, when the troops hit the death camps, yes, some of those pictures came out because everyone needed to know how bad that was. But a lot of the pictures in the books were the kind of things that Americans didn't see on the home front, because, for example, that there's that very tough picture of a dead horse along the side of the road and German villagers coming out to take pieces of the horse to eat because they're so desperately hungry. So the last year, we just focus on the last year of the war, and because we felt like it was kind of an inventory of what, you know, half a decade of war had brought
right.
to the world.
Yeah, by doing this. And look, I mean, I'm shocked that a book like this hasn't already been published, that, you know, these kind of photos aren't all in one place like this. You know, what are you hoping to gain by this? What's the message you want people to take from it?
Well, I mean, several things. The tribute to the soldier photographers, and also how hideous war is. I mean, you know, another thing is, you know, because near the end of the book is totally concentrated in 1945, and it's done chronologically. So, you know, around August, you start seeing the remnants of Japanese cities after the atomic bombings, and you realize that could happen to any city, you know, now. And we've kind of, I think we've grown pretty complacent about that.
Yeah, especially when you've got a president. I don't want this to be overly political, but you got a guy who believes you can nuke a hurricane.
Right. And just talks about, like, we need to be tough. And, you know, sometimes we need to be peaceful, you know. So that's the thing. Another thing is that I want to say about the book is that if you're a lover of photography, I think you'd really appreciate it, because what we did is we went to the National Archives and went through, all these pictures, picked the ones we wanted, and scanned the 4x5-inch negatives. These are big, lush negatives that have a lot of information, and we re-scanned them. So the pictures now look better than they ever did before, and they just pop off the page.
No, I mean, they're extremely high quality, and it made me wonder where you got them from. I mean, in the back of the book, you do list a number of the photographers. I don't know if they were all of them. I'm sure they're all the ones that are included in the book. But, you know, I was wondering, you know, where these came from. Were they personal collections that these photographers maybe held, or I guess they were all in the National Archives? Is that what I'm getting?
They were all in the National Archives. It was the Army Signal Corps pictures, and we picked the Army Signal Corps pictures because the Army was all over the globe, and so in the book, you're in Burma, you're in Philippines, you're in Germany, you're all over the world, because it was a world war. And this was, these people who became soldier photographers during the war, many of them were not professional photographers at all. One guy was a clerk in a camera store, for example.
Right, they were just kids handed a camera.
Yeah, they were trained, handed a camera, and, you know, they had a camera and they had a sidearm, and they couldn't really work them both at the same time, so they had to decide. And these, while the war was dangerous for all soldiers, many of the combatants, you know, if you were in an infantry unit, you might fight weeks at a time, but then you'd have months off waiting for the next battle. In some cases, at least, these photographers were always going to the sound of the fire. They were always in the front lines, and so it was very hazardous duty. And especially here on Veterans Day, I just want to say that we just really want to give a due to these photographers who risked their lives to create this record that kind of tells us something 75 years later.
Yeah, I mean, you know, them along with medics, they're the ones rushing towards the worst possible places. But, you know, this was before, you know, we actually had a title of photojournalist. It's always amazing to me that these folks go out and do this, but, then we wouldn't know what this stuff looks like.
You know, another thing about this is that, you know, we're all used to our iPhones and, you know, taking, you know, 10 pictures in 10 seconds. But these guys were using these old speed graphic kind of press photographer cameras, the ones you see in the old movies sometimes. And, you know, they could put in one cartridge with one negative at a time and had to shoot it. And then they had to pull that out and reload, you know, another picture. And it was extremely difficult. There's a picture in the book of a rolling darkroom. They pulled the darkroom as a trailer behind their Jeep. So it was very difficult conditions for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, because in one of the photos, you actually see one of the guys holding this monstrosity of a camera. And I'm going, good luck carrying that thing around all day.
Right. So you have a copy of the book. So the story, the cover picture, we really love, and it goes so well with the title Aftershock. It's a picture of PFC Jack Pulliam from Pennsylvania, who was captured in the Battle of the Bulge and on his 20th birthday, taken to Germany as a slave laborer, and managed after a month to escape. Hid in a house. A German officer came into the house and he killed the German officer to avoid being recaptured. and then hid in a fruit cellar until the Allies came and liberated him and took him back. And the picture on the, since you have the book, you can describe the picture, what the guy's face looks like and what he looks like. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's the first thing you notice. And, you know, I didn't realize the backstory on that, but I'm working through it because it is a sizable book. I mean, this thing is a monstrosity. And I hate to call it a coffee table book, because that's what they used to call it. But there's almost 300 pages of pictures, and it's a thing to go through. I mean, and I can only go through, and maybe it's just me, but I can only go through so much of it. Until I get angry or despair run the gamut of emotion.
Right. And it's the weird thing about it, Rick, is that it's a combination of kind of beauty and ugliness, because the photographs are very well taken and just kind of amazing in the way that they're taken. And, you know, but they're pictures of devastated cities and desperate civilians and bombing victims and things like that. So it's humanity and its ugliness, but the book itself has kind of an odd beauty because of how beautiful the photographs are and how dedicated the people who took them were.
Yeah, and so what kind of response are you getting from this? I mean, because when I saw it, I was like, you know, it was shocking, I'm like, wow, this is, you know, it's like we had done a civil rights tour a couple of years ago, and I was walking through some of the horrors of that era, and the photography of that era. It was the same kind of shock. What kind of response are you getting from people?
Really good. I mean, the book's just come out, and you know, it's just become available, and people can order it from. It's published by City Files Press. That City Files, one word, CityFiles. And it's a Chicago-based press, and we're getting great response, but it's just come out, so you know, we'll have to see. We're speaking at the National Archives on Thursday, so that's pretty exciting.
Well, good for you. Now, did you have the opportunity to interview any of these photographers? Or, I mean, well, obviously, you know, 75 years ago, this stuff happened. Is there anyone still around? Did you have the opportunity?
There's one guy, but we weren't able to interview him. There may be more than one, but we knew of, but he was, you know, not available for an interview. But we did, the cover guy I was talking about, who has this 1,000-yard stare on his face and just looks exhausted and just... He exemplifies aftershock and has this cap, this German officer's cap, the cap of the officer he killed. He's wearing that. We did contact his family, and they shared a 19-page memoir that he had written describing the entire ordeal.
Oh, wow.
That's why we know such good details about it. And yet there are several photographs that we unraveled mysteries for. We tracked down there's a wonderful picture. I mean, you know, when I say wonderful, I don't mean that it's what it shows is great. I mean that it's just a beautiful work of art as a photograph. But there's a picture of Chinese relatives standing over boxes of the skulls and bones of their the entire diplomatic corps of the Republic of China that was murdered by the Japanese in the Philippines. There's like 8 people. And we managed to track down the daughter of the consul general who was one of those murdered, and she had never seen that picture before.
Wow. And that's got to be some kind of, you know, when you go through this, that's got to be some kind of moment. I mean, you know, the historical fact and all this and combining that today, that's got to be something.
Yeah, it is amazing when you find new facts that have not really been told to any kind of wide audience of things that happened 75 years ago.
Surprise you as you were going through anything that, you know, jumped out that you remember from doing your research in this?
Well, I mean, what we try to do, as well as the pictures, the text has just interesting nuggets of facts, like... for example, there's one German city that there's a picture of, and we do mention that Henry Kissinger was like the chief administrator of it when it was first occupied by the Allies. That was one thing we ran across. And I was unaware of the fact that Nagasaki was not supposed to get bombed that day, that they were going to another Japanese city, but the weather was bad, so they turned to Nagasaki. it just goes to show how, you know, just strange little things in, you know, human history can have big consequences.
Wow. See, I didn't know that either. I mean, we're here. Might as well drop it here and turn, go home. Is that the theory?
Well, Nagasaki was a secondary target. You know, it just was not where they were going to go, but except for the weather. So the book is also filled with little known facts like that, that tell people things that, and that they didn't know. And, you know, and it's, we go through so much of stuff. So much of 1945 was such an amazing year because it wasn't just the end of the war. It was also the start of a new age. I mean, there's a picture of Jewish refugees who are getting ready to go to Palestine. There's a picture of Vietnamese protesting, saying that they want, you know, their country to be independent. Because if you remember, you know, it was occupied by the Japanese, but before that, the French had held it. And when World War II ended, the Vietnamese were hoping that they would be an independent country, but the French decided to reoccupy it. And so there are pictures there's a picture of the Trinity nuclear test, which is the first test of a nuclear bomb. And so there are all these pictures that as well kind of show the new world happening.
It's an incredible book, and I hope it does really well. And I hope people with a strong stomach order it. They go to, what is it, cityfilespress.com is the website, I believe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cityfilespress.com.
Yeah, we'll get links out. Yeah, or Google City Files Press.
We'll get links out to make sure that people have an opportunity to pick it up. Highly suggested. It's fascinating, but it takes, in my view, you know, it takes a strong stomach to take a look at some of these images. I wish you the best in it, and I'd love to have you come back at some point down the road and share some thoughts again on this.
It was great to talk to you.
Appreciate it, Mark. Thanks so much. Again, the book, Aftershock, The Human Toll of War. Go to cityfilespress.com to get a hold of that book. Just amazing. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.